It's the JT the Brick Show.
They get the snap ball. Hand off Jacobs. Has the first down of the goal. 15, 10, 5, touchdown Raiders.
Broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He is smothered and brought down. Max Crosby came around for the sack.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 20 years.
Shotgun snap to Stidham. Lob to your corner for Adams. Makes the grab in the corner. Touchdown Raiders. An absolutely perfect pass. And Adams dragged his feet in the back left corner.
And now, filling in for JT today is Harry Ruiz.
Our number two of the JT the Brick Show kicks off right now here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM, here in our Lotus Broadcasting Studios, which, by the way, shout out to our general manager, Natalie Marsh. A couple of weeks back, I had just come back from Mexico, and I was literally just unpacking my bags, and she sent me a text, "Hey, do you want to go to a Raiders rookie event at Raiders headquarters?" I was like, "Absolutely. Let's head out there." Showered, changed, head over to Henderson, and it was pretty cool being able to meet all of the rookies that got drafted by the Silver and Black and some of the undrafted free agents, and also their families were out there. So that was pretty cool. Parents, brothers, sisters, Trey Taylor, who I'm a really big fan of the stuff that he has done, that he did with Air Force, now that he's being out here with the Silver and Black. It was pretty cool because his little brothers were there and he hadn't even noticed. They were all wearing the same thing. So that was pretty cool. And their families really enjoyed the environment provided by the Raiders and also the partners that are out there. And if we're talking about family, we got to talk about Raider Dad and all the great stuff that they do out here with the youth, with the kids out here in Las Vegas. And they absolutely keep on bringing it out here for the folks in Las Vegas. And Josh from Raider Dad, he's joining us here today. Welcome on the air, brother. And how excited are you that the season's about to kick off, that we're able to talk about Raiders football once again, and you guys being able to collaborate, bringing kids to Raider games?
Hey, Harry, I just want to thank you so much for allowing us to come on here, share our story. We are super excited to have the Raider Dad preseason event next month, August 23rd. Hopefully we can get you out there again this season.
Of course. Yeah. So you guys are going to be tailgating and taking kids out there to the game. You guys are I actually don't usually go out during Raiders preseason games to the tailgates because, as we know, it's very hot. But you guys invited me last year, and I absolutely made the trek out there. Lot H, if I'm correct, right?
Yes, Lot H. We'll be out there again. The last 2 years we were able to invite at least 50 families. Last year was 57 families. It's a way to decrease costs for families, create a break from reality, bring these community partners together to provide food and beverage, provide shirts during the regular season. This year, every kid is going to have the opportunity to take home their own Raiders jersey. And it just allows to create that memory for these families that, not everyone gets the opportunity to go to the Raiders game, especially in Las Vegas, because Las Vegas is an expensive city to begin with. And with the Raiders there, it's even become more expensive.
Absolutely. Josh Kamenite, the founder and director of Raider Dad, you guys have been doing this since 2022. What have you learned in these years to now and being able to grow this this foundation?
I just never really thought in the beginning that we would be able to do what we're doing on a regular basis. We're doing, in 2 years, 187 kids have had the opportunity to experience a Raiders game and to bring those closest to them, parental figures, mentors, whoever they would like to bring to the game with them. I just don't want to forget about the fans. Like, this all started because of season ticket holders getting behind. We wanted to help develop the fan base in Las Vegas, and it's just remarkable how much support we've got in such a short amount of time.
Absolutely, and of course, you guys are Raider Dad. You guys like taking kids out to Raiders games, but you guys also bring out kids to other sporting events in the town, right?
Yeah, the Raiders recently donated a suite. They were at the soccer game last Wednesday. We take athletes. We take kids from medical facilities. Any type of kids organization. It's just about creating that experience so they can experience something that they're not always able to experience and see what, you know, what's out there for these kids. And the mission just keeps growing. We've been donated tickets out in Oakland 2 years in a row. We'll be out there September 7th. We were donated a suite and some tickets. So we're letting the athletics know if they would move here. Raider Dad's ready to set up and do the same program in that stadium and any other sport that moves to Las Vegas.
Of course. And tell me, has there been a story from a kid that impacted you the most that you have been able to live that you're like, wow, man, what I'm doing, I got to keep on doing it?
You know, I don't want to say there's a favorite story, but there have been kids that have came through Raider Dad. There was a family, a Raiders family. We took them to a game, and then the father kept in touch with me. They talked about it for, you know, months, and he ended up passing away. But that memory lived on, and that was like one of the moments throughout the season one with that were like, this is what Raider Dad is about, creating those core memories for people that we, you know, I can't really determine what it's going to mean to a family because every situation is different. And it's just something that a lot of people have just got behind. And I'm sure this is just going to keep growing as we continue the season moving forward.
Josh Kamenite from Raider Dad is joining us. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, Vegas Raider Dad. You can also check him out on Facebook. If folks want to join this great initiative and be able to support you guys either with tickets, with donations, with help for the tailgate, what do they have to do, Josh?
You can reach out to us through VegasRaiderDad.org, or you can reach out to us, VegasRaiderDad@gmail.com. And we're always looking for volunteers, help. If you want to donate an experience, we're setting up for next month. We'd love to go over 50 families, but we'll see where it ends up.
Absolutely. So August 23rd, that's the annual preseason game that you guys are going to have the big party for, right?
Yes.
And anybody's...
We will be there. We will be there for the Dallas game, but we're going all in for the Niners. So,
hey, I look at it this way. The further out in the month of August that you get closer to September, it means that the weather might be nicer. So I'll take that as a win. If fans want to go by, say hello out there at the tailgates, do you know a specific area?
We're going to be in Lot H.
And just look for Raider Dad, right? All the kids are wearing their shirts.
There's no way to miss us. I feel like we have the most kids most times. So you can come find us. Everyone's welcome to always join in.
Follow the smallest Raider fans out there, and that's where Raider Dad is going to be. So tell me about your association, because I know that the folks over at Raiders Fan Radio, they support your cause as well. So shout out to Merv, shout out to Jeff, shout out to Michelle. They always talk about you guys. How important is it to have people that you can associate with like them?
It's been a great help to not only have their partnership, their friendship, really. We talk regularly. But after season one, I was trying to find someone to really buy into this. And at times I was sitting there, I'm like, is anyone ever going to buy in to what I'm constantly out here preaching for, you know, Raider Nation, for these kids? And I believe it was either – it was through you or Silver and Black Today that Murph reached out through a tweet and just asked, you know, like, what can we do to help you? And ever since then, we've created this great partnership. They actually not only donate to Raider Dad monetarily, they actually come out, see what the impact is, and try to help us to raise as many Raider fans as we can during the preseason.
That's always great, man, and that's what the Raider Nation's all about, and that's what I always say. It's like, yes, I broadcast the Raiders games on the Spanish side, on the radio broadcast, but before everything, I'm a Raider fan, man. I'm a member of the Raider Nation, so like, if folks like you are doing something amazing, and you tell me, it's like, hey, can you come out to the tailgate? I'll say yes in a heartbeat, and I'm definitely going to be checking you guys out, checking all the kids out, and being able to enjoy some time out there together, so don't forget Vegas Raider Dad on social media. Check them out. Go to their website. Support if you can. And Josh, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for accepting the invitation to come on today on Raider Nation Radio. Anything else that you would love to share with the Raider Nation?
That's it. Just anyone that wants to come join, stop by Lot H, any Raiders game. Hopefully we'll see you this season, Harry. I'll have a Raider Dad jersey ready for you.
There you go. I'll definitely be rocking it soon. I'll bring it here into the studio one of these days. I really appreciate you, Josh. Check him out. Check Vegas Raiders Dad. They do an amazing, amazing job. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. There he goes. It's always great being able to put a spotlight on great foundations and folks that do amazing stuff for the Raider Nation, especially the younger kids, the younger generation. And I remember in the last segment, Bobby and I were talking about the cost of jerseys back in the day, where you would pay pretty cheap prices to get a jersey. And nowadays, sports, you go to an NBA game, it's more than likely going to be a pretty penny that's going to be going out of your pocket. And depending on the city and the team that's going to be playing, it's going to be even more expensive. So he said it perfectly. Vegas isn't a cheap city. Isn't a city where you're expecting to get something at a great price for you to be able to go into a concert, to go into a sporting event, to go into just a magic show or whatever. It's like, if there's people that are actually lucky that they wait until the very last minute and they might get a cheap ticket here or there. And I'll put myself in that bucket. I went to watch Carrie Underwood at Resorts World for like $35, and I was in the third row because I went online and found that ticket, and I was like, hey, told my girlfriend, babe, let's change. We got to be at Resorts World in 25 minutes. We missed the first three songs, but we enjoyed a great concert. Same thing, T-Mobile Arena. I went to Justin Timberlake. I knew that he wasn't going to be on stage until 9 p.m., so I waited until 8:15, and somebody was desperate on StubHub to get rid of some tickets, and I ended up paying, I think it was like $220 for a pair of tickets that each were actually priced at $500. So if you wait for the right moment, the right time, you might be able to get into a good show, but you're risking it. You might not be able to find a good deal here or there.
I'm an old bleep, and I got to tell you something. This whole thing is completely out of my league. Completely. I'm used to, okay, band is coming to town. I go, the day that the tickets go on sale, you go to the garden or whatever.
You go to the box office.
And you sit out there, and you pass around a bottle of blackberry brandy, and you stay up all night, and you wait for the tickets to go on sale, and you get your tickets that way. Instead of this getting on Ticketbastard's app, and
I like that.
You're number 4,000 in line, and yabba-dabba-doo. By the time they whack you with the service charges and... Nah, bleep this. I have no interest in that.
I was looking at tickets for Blink 182 for tomorrow and saw $50. I was like, oh, that's good. After fees, balloons to like $150. I was like, well,
yeah,
maybe I'll wait tomorrow until an hour or 30 minutes before the show and get my tickets then. But that's the way that things are here in Vegas.
That's the way they are all over the country with Ticketmaster and Live Nation. And that's why they've got an antitrust lawsuit. But that's another story.
Exactly. But what I'm going to is like, that goes on in every city. But the ticket prices... offer and demand. Vegas is a city where we have, what, more than 2 million people living here?
More or less. When you
include North people. Las Vegas, Henderson, 2 million humans living around in the valley. Then you add the thousands and thousands and thousands of folks that come into town for a sporting event, for a weekend.
A convention.
Man, those...
Yeah, we got a few of those.
Yeah.
Once in a while, occasionally.
Yeah, convention center, Sands, you go to...
40 million Mandalay visitors Bay. A year.
That's crazy.
According to the LBCBA last we checked.
Exactly. So that makes your prices balloon. I remember the first Raider game I went to in Oakland, my uncle and I were like, yeah, we going, because we went to the Raider Image.
Did they have money back then?
Almost. So we went to the Montebello Raider Image, and we went to buy some stuff, and the guy was like, hey, we got tickets, 2 for 1. I was like, what? All right. How much? $20. I was like, what? So that's 2 tickets for $20? Yeah. Heck, let's go to Oakland. We made the drive up to Oakland, got the hotel room, slept there, went to the Coliseum, had a blast.
But sure, of course.
How many people, with all due respect to Oakland, a city that I really love because I used to go out there for the games, I got a lot of friends that are very close to me from out there. How many folks travel to Oakland saying, I want to go to Oakland for a weekend? Heck, the Dodgers.
You're asking me?
Yeah.
A few? I have no idea.
Yeah, there's not a lot of reasons to go out to the Bay. Heck, we've mentioned it before on the show. In-N-Out, closed shop out there. The Walmart that was a couple of blocks away from the stadium, they closed shop out there. There's restaurants that are like, yeah, we don't want to be in this place right now.
You can't even jump off the bridge anymore. They put nets underneath.
There you go. Makes it even difficult for that. But that's what it's like Vegas. You come here, you're expecting to spend a pretty penny. You're coming here not to be on a budget, and that's the reality of things.
You know, because that's kind of funny to me, because I see the tourists over on, I see the tourists walking up and down the strip on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays. Those are the cheapy days. The guys that fly in on Sunday nights and stay till Thursday night, those are the midweek, you know.
But even then, but you'll see the hotel room for $40, and then after the resort fees and everything, it's up to 100.
It's 110, right.
Exactly. So, or you want to go to a buffet. Back then, I've heard stories of buffets being $15, $20 or cheaper.
$1.99 breakfast at the Sahara. What are you talking about?
So I remember on the strip, it used to be pretty cheap. Nowadays, it's like you want to spend money, it's expensive. You go to T-Mobile Arena for the basketball game tonight. You want a drink? You're going to more than likely be spending $20, $25. Mm-hmm. You want a pop, some popcorn? $15.
Well, let me see if I can put this in perspective. Suppose you want to go see the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to go see them, say, I don't know, Philadelphia or whatever, you're going to spend between 50 and $75 a ticket. It's a stadium, the 75,000 seats, even a crappy seat. You know, you're going to spend 50 to $75. That same ticket in Vegas is going to be anywhere from 150 to $200.
Yeah, double or triple the price.
So that's just kind of, and that is to describe as you're speaking, that's exactly how it works.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
And it's always been that way. God, I remember seeing Ted Nugent back in 97. The tickets at the Aladdin was something like $30, $40. Okay, not a huge amount. But then he's playing over in Boston, and the tickets are like $10.
And that, me back in the day, paying 2-for-1 tickets for $20 on Mount Davis over at the Oakland Coliseum. You want to come to Vegas? I can guarantee you, you'll never get a ticket for $20. You'll get lucky if you get in the lower $100. Or if you get something barely under $100, it might be somebody selling a ticket 5 minutes before the game kicks off, and you hope that it gets delivered to your account in time for you to see kickoff.
No, I've already decided 99.9% of that stuff has just completely priced me out of the market, and that's just the way it is. I'm kind of like you guys. Man, I can't afford that kind of stuff. I work for a living, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and for me nowadays, pick and choose. It's like, if you were in another market, you might be able to be like, oh,
sure.
Multiple events.
You know, if I was living in Boston, I could go to 3 concerts a week for what I pay for one ticket.
Yeah, I was listening to the Morning Tailgate today, and the guest from the Summer League was like, yeah, we got $25 tickets. I was like, well, where? I went to check out the opening night ones, and you're paying like $100 to get into the building. But, of course, that's all the hype. It's Bronny. It's all the rookies and everybody being interested in
one. But then again, I mean, you go back to when the whole thing first started. I mean, you could get a day pass for $8. It's cheaper than a movie back then.
Times are changing, brother. Times are changing out
not
here.
Not for the better. Just saying. Old guy speaking.
Right? Damn, Bobby, you look right now like you need a good drink, like a Remy Martin. The official cognac of the
I think I should. I think at this point I should just jump straight to heroin, but whatever.
No. Far away from that. Remy Martin is the official cognac of the JT The Brick Show this summer. The first Friday of every month, that means this Friday, is ladies' night at Ghost Bar at the Palms. All ladies will receive a complimentary Botanist French 75. And Remy Martin wants to remind you that a margarita without Cointreau is Margo wrong. Make it Margarite, Cointreau, tequila, and lime. Please drink responsibly. Time for a commercial break. Leo Aragus, former Raiders punter, will be joining us afterwards. So stay tuned here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
Yeah, I'm not doing no demonstrations like Coach McMahon, but I really want to put emphasis on it. First of all, we got some really good specialists between AJ and Daniel. I mean, we couldn't be blessed to have those two difference makers there. But obviously with the new rule, right? And it's a learning curve for all of us. We had the officials out here from the National Football League, and they were wide-eyed because nobody's seen this live yet. It looks good in practice, but that first preseason game, I think everybody needs to tune in for that opening kickoff to see what's about to happen, because there's a lot of different variables that could go into it. And we said how's being officiated, what different special teams coordinators are coming up with ideas. So I really want to emphasize that. But more importantly, we talked about this earlier, the development of this off-season program for me was our younger players and our special teams guy, because that's going to be the core group of our team. You know what Devontae's going to do. You know what Max Crosby's going to do and Christian Wilkins. But we need to give the guys that's going to make this team on special teams more opportunities to showcase that and give Tom the time to teach.
Yeah, Tom McMahon and his special teams crew, they have a big, big year coming up, because with all the changes in the kickoffs, that's going to be a difference maker in the NFL, because you're adding hundreds and hundreds of plays just with kickoffs being returned continuously and having the opportunity for players to make plays. That's going to be something very, very important. And somebody that experienced all of that in the NFL is a 7-year vet in the league. His first 4 seasons were with the Silver and Black, and I'm very happy to be able to chat with him here today on the JT the Brick Show on Raider Nation Radio is Leo Aragus, all the way from Texas. Mi hermano, Leo, ¿cómo estás? How are you? Always great catching up with you.
I'm doing fine, partner. How about you, Harry?
Living life, brother, living life. And hey, it's the last month of the year without football, so that makes me very, very happy. I got to ask you, special teams, they got that word special in the name, but with all these rule changes, for you, how hard would it be to adapt?
Well, I'm telling you, it seems like every time they always do some changes, it always starts with special teams. But then again, you know, I can see where there's been a lot of injuries, a lot of concussions, and, you know, they're trying to take care of the players more often than not. But, you know, with this changes, you know, they're trying to keep the excitement of one play pretty much makes it all change really quickly. On a punt return, on a kickoff return, you know, a blocked field goal, whatever it is, you know, special teams, it always only takes one play. But, you know, if they can change it to help out the kids and keep them healthy and prolong their career, why not? You know, but again, it just seems that it always happens during special teams. That's why they call it special, you know.
Exactly. Leo Aragus joining us here, former Silver and Black punter for 4 seasons. You go back to those years where you were with the squad. Would you ever go to Cole Ford or any of the kickers that you got to play with and be like, hey, can I try to get a kickoff in and see if I could do better?
Actually, I was blessed to do some kickoffs for the Raiders back when, Davis. The kicker we had there, Davis, went down, had a quad pull, and he couldn't kick long field goals, but he can kick the short field goals and couldn't kick off. So I kicked off and I punted for 2-3 games during the season of 98. That's the same year I got the NFL record with 16 punts. I was also doing the kickoffs then.
Wow.
So it's definitely a fun situation, because when I came into the league, right before we were able to kick off the 3-inch tee that we were able to use and kick it real high and would have all these touchbacks. So the league changes on us, moved the ball back to the 30-yard line and brought the tee down to a 1-inch, so that way we wouldn't be getting all these touchbacks and they wanted more returns. So for the time I played, you know, we had these guys returning balls, you know, out of the end zone every time, just because we couldn't reach the end zone anymore. The balls were getting to the 5. To the goal line, just because they had moved the tee down to a 1-inch, we weren't able to get that, you know, like in golf, to say tee it up high and let it fly. Well, you know, they were teeing us down, and so we were able to go out there and get some good licks, and a lot of concussions were happening left and right. But those were the fun years, you know. You had the wedge busters, you had the wedge guys forming the wedge, big old linemen coming down, you know, and then you would have these linebackers going down there on kickoff and blowing up the wedges. So it was some good hitting back in the day. But I guess now they're starting to take care of these kids a lot more than what they did when we were playing. Back when it was fun, you had to crack back shots and, you know, don't fall asleep. Always keep your head on the swivel, because you never knew until that whistle blew, the game was still on.
Yeah, man, it's a completely different game nowadays. And yes, that was Greg Davis that you were kicking for.
Yes.
And how much different is it for you, Leo? Like, because you've seen now online and at training camps, places all around. Well, not training camp, the OTAs and other kind of sessions.
Right.
You've seen kickers with the kickoffs. You see punter with the kickoffs. You've seen defensive and offensive players just trying with the kickoffs. And I mean, for me, it's just like interesting. How much different is it for you as a punter to go and do the kickoffs?
You know, well, I was blessed to play soccer when I grew up. So being a goalie, you know, you would always get the ball and you were able to punt it out of your hands, or you'd be able to do the goal kicks off the ground. So, you know, growing up as a soccer player, you know, it was easy for me to do it. But now you have pretty much 80 to 85% of the kids out there now start playing soccer. The very first sport now they're playing is soccer. They start off kicking a ball. So, you know, these kids are learning how to kick the ball a lot sooner than when we were kids. So you're going to have everybody and their mother being able to kick. So that's why you don't have these guys like Ocho Cinco back in the day that used to go out there and kick. And some of these kickers that go down during the season, you know, you have some guys that are just be the receiver that come out and kick field goals, and they're backup kickers, you know, because you never know. But for being a punter and a kicker, it's two totally different mechanics. One being, you know, when you punt, you're coming straight through as a field goal kicker or kickoff guy. You're coming in as a soccer style, side-swinging it. So it's a totally different mechanism. So when people ask you, can you punt and can you kick? Well, it just depends. I can do it for a game or two just to make sure that we get by until we go out and sign another guy that can just, you know, pretty much specialize themselves as a kicker or a punter, because in most cases, kickers can't punt and punters can't kick. So, you know, that's why, you know, at the same time, you know, you're trying to protect your guys out there. But if something were to go down in the game, you'll have somebody that can emergency come out and do it just to keep them busy for that game and then get it over with and then go out and sign somebody right after the game.
Absolutely. And how happy are you that with this rule change, you're seeing special teams players getting rewarded more, not only the kickers and the punters, but also kick returners, punt returners, and like a Cordarrelle Patterson or a Keyshawn Nixon, who used to be a Raider. How happy are you that those guys now are getting rewarded as they should?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm telling you, these certain plays that we play, we're out there mainly 6 to no more than 8 times a game. You got to go out and find yourself a player that can do that one special play in one play, and that's it. So whenever you start really considering what they call the specialist out there, we're out there for that one reason. You know, we're either out there to punt, we're out there to kick, and or return the ball, you know. So we're really just guys that are coming in for that specialized play. You know, they're also changing the balls when it comes out to the kicking down, that they call it. They bring in the K-balls. So, you know, even for balls even for the game to be changing, that they bring in a special ball just for the kicking play, you know, it definitely gets to a point where everybody's now starting to get credit, because it is a specialized position that we played, and now that everybody's taking credit for it, and they're literally making the fact that special teams is part of the game. It's a third of a game. That you know, it's about time that everybody starts, you know, takes it into consideration.
And giving
players too.
Yeah, giving you guys the respect that you deserve. Leo Araguz, 7-year veteran in the NFL, former Raiders puncher, is on the air here with us today on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Now, Leo, I got to ask you, you were a part of some training camps. You were part of those dog days of summer. I was saying on the air, it's a different experience for a punter than a kicker, than a running back, than a quarterback, than every position. But how hard are those days for a team?
I'm telling you, those are long days. But that's why they call them, you know, those training camp days. You know, these guys go to work. You know, they're giving us some time off during the off season to do what we need to do, take care of our bodies, come back and be ready to go. Because when we come back in shape and mentally, all we're doing is just trying to get our game pretty much dialed out to make sure we're ready to go when the season starts. But, you know, it's mainly more camaraderie, making sure that whoever we're going to add to the roster, that we're picking the right guys. And so, you know, it's mainly just business. It's all business. And so when you're coming in for those training days, you know, sometimes, you know, back in the day when we had those two-a-days, you know, we were shoulder pads the whole time. You know, it was hot. You know, luckily we were in Napa, but still 95 degrees is 95 degrees no matter where you look at it. And so now in Vegas, I think they have the nice little indoor facility that they can go in there and cover. But at the end of the day, you know, you got to toughen up these kids that are coming in. They're not used to that heat because they're in the August and September games that you have, the preseason games, and then the September games. Those games are hot. So you want to pretty much get mentally prepared and physically prepared for all that. So those training days are definitely key for everybody to get, you know, mentally and physically prepared.
Yeah, that's why when they moved to Vegas, it was like, we need an indoor stadium and we need an indoor facility. That way, if we have to, we can bring those practices indoors. I mean, during training camp, when they held it out here, they had to go outside because it's 90 guys, and it's hard to have them in the field and a half, which is what they have in there at headquarters. I got to ask you, Leo, the team now is going to have their training camp this year in Costa Mesa, first year that they're not in Vegas or Henderson for their training camp since they relocated to town. How big is that for the team to move somewhere else for a couple of weeks and have that time to just be players on players, coaches with coaches, just the team, and not be able to go back, not be able to see your family at nights?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you know, with Antonio Pierce being an ex-player, and he hasn't been detached from the sport very long as a player, so he still understands the fact that whenever you come into work and you're coming to work, you go to work. And so by them going to Costa Mesa and having the opportunity to go, I mean, it is a time to where you as players and you as coaches come together. All you do is work, and all you're doing is there is just to pretty much go to that one, like what you said, Costa Mesa, is that where y'all are going this year. So definitely, it's a nice little place. I mean, it's a beach area, but then at the same time, you're going there to work. So you build that camaraderie, you build that team, work ethic, where you pretty much are all business, and then when you come back, you're ready to go and go to work.
Now, my last question for now is, you look at Antonio Pierce. Last time I saw you out here in Las Vegas, it was a different coach. Now you're going to come to Las Vegas in a couple of weeks, and you're going to have Antonio Pierce as a head coach. How much different is that? Because you look at somebody that same way as you. You left your blood, sweat, and tears out there on the field. How different is it having a coach that was a player compared to somebody that wasn't a player?
If anything, you know, when I see it, you know, being Antonio Pierce, I mean, what better coach could you bring in when he's a Raider, grew up as a Raider fan and also being a player where he understands the mystique of that being a Raider means something. And so for us to be able to have an ex-player and understand what players do go through and bringing him as a head coach, he definitely has that mentality and it kind of fits perfect where the whole Raider image is going to be where, you know, you're bringing in an ex-player that understands that, a linebacker, defensive-minded coach, where he's going to bring back that mean attitude that it's always been, you know, once a Raider, always a Raider, and it means something. So for us to be able to see Antonio Pierce being out there and our coach, you know, it's a great feeling knowing that we're going to have that attitude brought back to the Raiders.
Absolutely. And now it's been back-to-back years that you make it out to Las Vegas for the alumni game. Will the folks in Las Vegas have you once again out here for that alumni game, Leo?
Oh, yeah. We're coming up. So we'll be up there for the San Francisco game. And even though they're preseason games, I'll tell you what, man, we're still bringing the heat.
That's what I'm talking about. That's fantastic. We'll try to get you up there in the booth. Once again, it's always fun being able to chat with you, to enjoy some time with you. And we might as well also end up having a brew or two. So, Leo, I really appreciate you, my brother. Hope to see you out here in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks, man. Please say hello to the family.
I sure will, man. I appreciate you, man. Love you, man.
Love you too, brother. We'll catch up soon. Shout out to Leo Aragus. I'll be sharing a Modelo with him because Modelo is an official cerveza of the Raiders and the official beer of fans with the fighting spirit. Modelo, rooted in the heart of the Raider Nation. What did he say? It's like, hey, kickers were players too. And this year, they're going to be even more important. And I love that because the Raiders got two of the best in the game in Daniel Carlson and A.J. Cole. Hopefully, we can link up A.J. Cole and Leo Aragus together. They can tell some very good stories between those two guys. Time for a break, Raider Nation. We'll come right back to wrap up today's JT the Brick Show.
For Portugal, Bernardo Silva of Manchester City. If he puts this penalty in,
It's all over. They're into the quarterfinals. He does! Portugal make it through on penalties.
What a show yesterday. Portugal putting on. I mean, it was a scoreless game, but I tuned in for the penalty kick. The penalty kicks at the end, and it was incredible. Their goalkeeper simply killed it. So shout out to Diogo Costa, who stopped all three penalty kicks that he faced in that game, and they got the win because of that. And now they're into the next phase, the quarterfinal phase. Out of the eight teams in the quarterfinal so far, five are in the top 10 of the FIFA rankings. That's quality soccer out there in Europe in the Euros. So that's going to be very, very fun. Out here in America, we got Copa America. And for the top two teams in CONCACAF in the Central and Northern America part of the world, things didn't go really well. Mexico got booted on Sunday, and then yesterday this happened.
Free kick for Uruguay after the Reina foul. De La Cruz sends it in. Turner the save. The rebound's a goal. U.S. looking at the side, hoping to see a flag come up. It's not going to come up.
Matias Oliveira with the goal that gave Uruguay the 1-0 win over the United States. And with it, Uruguay advances with a perfect record into the next phase. They will be playing in Las Vegas this Saturday. And the U.S., because they couldn't win, they are out of the Copa America in the group stage. Same as with Mexico. That is terrible for both of these teams. Greg Berhalter, I don't know how he's going to be able to keep his job. Jimmy Lozano, I don't know how he's going to be able to keep his job in 2 years. These teams are going to be hosting the World Cup in a three-country World Cup because it's going to be Canada, it's going to be Mexico, it's going to be the U.S., most of the games in the U.S. Mexico is going to play in Mexico, Canada is going to be playing Canada, everybody else in the U.S. These teams are in their worst shape in a very, very, very long time, Mexico and the U.S., and them not being able to win or even make it into the next phase in the U.S., in this Copa America, that's terrible performances by them.
Okay, Mr. No idea what the hell you're talking about over here, but the worst performance by America ever? I mean, I remember soccer in the 70s. There was like three Portuguese kids and me, and that's it.
In Copa America at home, it has to be. When you go to the World Cup, the U.S., it used to be, hopefully we make it into the next phase.
It used to be the World Cup. The United States wasn't even an afterthought in the World Cup until like about 20 years ago.
No, but they would make it into the World Cup. Because
really? I must have missed something.
Yeah, in CONCACAF, the way it worked until recently, because now the World Cup is going to be way more than 32 teams, is it was three teams made it into the World Cup representing Central and North America. And another team had an opportunity to play a team from Australia to see if which one was like a wild card. Up to four teams in this area of the world would make it into the World Cup. It would always be Mexico, the U.S., and then the third team would either be Costa Rica, Jamaica, and then as of recently, Panama started.
So they're not counting Southern America when they're doing this.
No. Okay, Southern America, they got
Argentina, Brazil, Chile, forget it.
Exactly. So the U.S., they would compete because now they're the host next in 2 years.
You're looking at your watch for 2 years. You need a calendar, sir.
Oh, no. I'm just checking the time. I don't want to be late when we send that over to Q.
Oh, we won't be late, I promise.
In the World Cup qualifiers, if you host the World Cup, you advance automatically. Okay. So that's the case with Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. for 2026. If you're not hosting it, you got to qualify. Back then, until 2022, that was the last World Cup, U.S. competed with Mexico, with Costa Rica, with Jamaica, with Panama, with Haiti. Like all these teams that...
Haiti's a little girl that screws up football games.
IT. So those teams are the ones that Mexico and the U.S. are competing with. So Mexico and the U.S., it was 99% sure that they were going to make the World Cup. The thing is, once you get to the World Cup, that's when it becomes interesting. And Mexico, up until 2 years ago, when they were eliminated in the group stage, they would always make it into the round of 16. That's where they would always get eliminated.
Okay. I'll buy all that.
See,
I'm the guy, it's like, you tell me when the World Cup is coming within a week, I'll take out the Portuguese flag, I'll hang it off the porch for 2 weeks, here we go.
And let's go with Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, and that's the worst part for the U.S. Oh, yeah. They competed against Uruguay, against Panama, and against Bolivia. and they couldn't make it out of the group stage. That's terrible. Tomorrow,
yeah, but I mean, traditionally, U.S. soccer sucks to begin with. I mean, women's soccer, they do okay, but men's soccer has been
pathetic. Women's soccer, they are one of the elite teams in the world.
Men's soccer, they're more interested in going to the MLS
and
making
some
money.
And that's the worst part. And we're going to talk with Eric Winalda tomorrow about the U.S. men's national team, about Mexico national team.
He's an old buddy.
Great guy. Great guy, Eric Winalda. We'll be talking more soccer tomorrow because today is the last day of group stage play in the Copa America. If Brazil doesn't beat Colombia, we might get Brazil once again here in Las Vegas on Saturday. And that would be Brazil against Uruguay, a big matchup when it comes to South American soccer.
Screw the soccer match. That's just going to be a party and a half. Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Half of Brazil is going to come up here. And boy, folks, they do tend to party. You're going to have to take my word on that.
And that's the best part. If it's not Brazil, it's going to be Colombia. Still a damn good matchup and a damn good party for the South American folks here in Las Vegas.
I have to always give love to the Brazilian folks because I went to an Iron Maiden show with a half a dozen Brazilian guys one time. And
they crazy, right?
Boy, it was a party.
Yeah, we already got Brazil last week out here in Las Vegas. This past week against Paraguay. It could be Brazil against Uruguay on Saturday at Allegiant Stadium. That would be big time. Now, let's close out the show talking about some baseball. There was not a lot of baseball played yesterday. Actually, there was only three games, including the Houston Astros having to go from playing in an extra innings game on Sunday night in New York against the Mets and then traveling across the border to Canada and playing an early game against the Toronto Blue Jays. And they did pretty good.
The 1-0, and Alvarez hits it in the air pretty deep to left center. Going back on it, Varsho at the wall. He leaves. See you later! Yordan Alvarez goes deep.
Yeah, Yordan Alvarez went deep. That two-run home run, part of the win that the Astros had against the Blue Jays by a final score of 3-1. Interesting, on Sunday with that extra innings win against the Mets, it was the first time this season that the Astros were over 500. It took them all the way until July. Well,
they've been a kind of mediocre club this year.
They've had a hard time, and I hate to admit it because I remember that 2017 World Series between the Dodgers and the Astros and the trash can drama, the dilemma and everything. I hate to admit it, but they'd been good the last 6-7 years, winning 2 World Series in that time, making it to 3, I think, and always playing in the ALCS. So it's been weird seeing them below 500, but now they are over 500, 43 wins, 41 losses. They're only 3 games back of the Seattle Mariners. And a team that's been pretty hot as of late has been the New York Mets. Keep an eye on those guys.
He delivers. Swung on, hit in the air, deep center field. Young drifting back to the warning track. Turns at the wall. Gone! Go ahead! 3-run home run, J.D. Martinez! 6-3 Mets in the 10th.
Former Dodger J.D. Martinez right there, 9-7. The Mets win over the Nationals.
Former Red Sox, former Diamondback.
Exactly. J.D., his last team last year was the Dodgers. He did pretty good as a DH, but the Dodgers got another player for that position nowadays by the name of Shohei Ohtani.
I always liked J.D. Martinez. I mean, go back to the Diamondbacks. Yeah. He was a good guy.
Oh, yeah. Great dude, and he's doing better now. He had a hard start this season with the Mets, but he's doing way better. The Mets, 41-41. The way that the NL is playing, you're contending for that final wild card spot. So careful with those Mets. They got hot in June. Let's see how they do in July. And the last game of the day, the Colorado Rockies. They were able to get a big win against one of the best teams in the National League.
Pitch to Cave. And he'll hit it to right field, center field. That's going to be the game winner. Racing goal from third, Aaron Shoch, and Jake Cave on the first pitch he sees rips it into right center field. 8-7 Rockies.
It's crazy how baseball works. The Brewers?
Yeah, I know. You throw the ball, they hit it with a bat.
Oh, no,
crazy.
But the way, you look at the Rockies. They are the worst team in the National League, and they beat the best team in the National League Central. It's baseball, man. And
it happens.
Exactly.
I mean, even a broken clock is about twice a day, you know? I mean, look at the Chicago White Sox, the worst team in baseball, period. They've managed to win 14 games.
24, actually.
Oh, I've been paying attention. There you go.
Exactly, but what I like here is like you see a Rockies team that they're the worst in the National League, and they beat one of the teams that's leading a division. Yeah, there's always competition out there. So those were the games yesterday. We're actually going to talk baseball with Jose Moda, one of the broadcasters for the Dodgers on the Spanish side. He also does work with Sportsnet LA on the English side. Son of former Dodger Manny Moda, a former baseball player himself.
Let's see if you can say the word Dodger 3 or 4 more times in the next 2 minutes.
Los Dodgers. There you go. I said it in Spanish. That way I switched it up a little bit.
Oh, God. I got to get through this week. Anyway.
How about those Red Sox?
How about them? They're playing the Marlins today.
44-39.
Yeah.
It's still 8.5 games American League East.
We got to get out of here, but I'm going to say this real quick. They're a competitive team. They've got a few decent young players. They're not going anywhere this year, but at least they're not losing 6 or 7 games in a row. You know what I mean? It makes for an interesting summer, at least.
How frustrating is it for you to see your former pitcher now kind of killing it over in Atlanta?
Not really.
No?
It happens. What are you going to do?
That's what I was like. Every time I hear his name, I think about you, Bobby, because I remember
him doing the stuff. There's other things to think of me of, but I mean, if you want to think of me of Chris Sale, yeah, whatever.
There you go. A producer here doing a great job. Bobby Machado, I really appreciate you. Great seeing your face again. We'll see each other again tomorrow and on Friday. I'm here hosting the JT The Brick Show the rest of the week. Q Myers, he's next with Unnecessary Roughness. He always has a loaded lineup on his show, so don't miss it. I'm Harry Ruiz. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Raider Nation. We'll talk tomorrow here from noon to 2 on the JT The Brick Show on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.